Background as to, first of all, the siag issue that I'd like to get into a little bit, and also the Shomei Kona topic that we alluded to when we started, and to give some discussion of that. Let's see how much time we have for it. I don't want it to take forever, but some of the background about that topic. Then we would probably like to proceed rather quickly through Beis and the Beis and Gimel and Aleph, the smaller points on that make some progress. The question is that that Beis and the Beis is a little bit relevant to the major disputes with the Gaonim and the Rabbeinu Tam and the Gra, as far as the Shkia definition of Zmanim, which is a very complicated topic. So the question is, do we want to discuss this topic? Do we want to discuss the topic maybe at a different time? Because it's going to be a little bit of a bump to get over. So the question is, A, we could skip it. B, we could discuss it, but discuss it either at a different time or maybe, you know, in a completely different context, maybe in an optional chabur outside of this structure. What are people's feelings, Sean?
I'm sure I might discuss it at some point.
Okay, definitely talk about it at some point, but not necessarily tomorrow.
Okay,
why don't we cover it? Okay, my instinct is we could talk about it if you'd like. Probably should not necessarily do it in Beis and Mabeis in order to allow us to make some progress. There's relevance to it in Beis and Mabeis, but maybe we could push it off a week or two or some other time, maybe whether we discuss it in this context or a different context, but maybe to skip it and come back to it.
Where's your
Rebbeinu Tam? Rebbeinu Tam is not here. Is it the best time, sugya-wise, you think, to discuss it? Yeah, we'll figure it out. But it's probably, just for the flow, it's probably better if we don't do it tomorrow. All right, fine. And then how about we should finish these two topics today? Let's see what we can do. All right, so first of all, so we were discussing yesterday. Close the door. Just close the door. Okay, so we were discussing yesterday different concepts related to the gezeirah that we find in the Mishnah. Right, that according to Rabbi Gamliel, Kriyashma is all night, and Chachamim, the way we seem to conclude, Chachamim in theory and Lamdus agree with Rabbi Gamliel, but instituted a gezeirah that Kriyashma should be until Chatzos. And there are a number of machlokas that are relevant to this Mishnah. First of all, to this concept in the Mishnah. First of all, the question of whether or not this gezeira is really true halacha l'maisa. And the Gemara seems to assume early on that Rabbi Gamliel's psak is dominant, which supports the position of the Rush and the Tur, that we don't have such a gezeira, that l'chalchila, you can read Kriya Shema at any time of the night. But the other Rishonim, the Rambam, perhaps most prominently, I think the Shulchan Aruch quotes his opinion also, do recognize the gezeirah. So that's one dispute, whether or not this gezeirah is even accepted lahalacha. And we discussed yesterday how that may contrast to matzah, that the Rush, who doesn't recognize the gezeirah here, does suggest the gezeirah when it comes to matzah, that when it comes to matzah, so our practice is to eat the afikoma before chetzos anyway, for the most part. But this was a machlokas tanaim, and the Rush suggested in Pesachim that even the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, that you could have matzah all night, would still recommend making a gezeirah to have it before chatzos. For this reason, we discussed what might be the differences or similarities between matzah and Kriya Shema. Then the question was, what about Hekter Chalavim Ve'evarim? Now, again, reading the Mishnah straight, one would have got the impression that such a gezeirah was true there as well. Rashi, except according to the Beis Halevi, who understood Rashi differently, Rashi gave us the impression that there's no gzeirah by Hekta Chalavim Ve'evarim. We discussed a little bit why that might be. Machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam, because the Rambam does recognize such gzeirah. So today's topic we'd like to zero in on is the very controversial statement of the Rabbeinu Yonah. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes that this gzeirah of Chachamim, to say that Kriya Shema should be read before Chatzos, was instituted in such an absolute way that it is no longer possible, according to Chachamim, to read Kriya Shema after Chatzos. This is a very striking comment for a number of reasons. And there's a lot of discussion whether or not this Rabbeinu Yonah is correct. I should point out something that you don't see discussed so much in these essays, is the fact that there's a very little significance whether or not Rabbeinu Yonah is correct, because Rabbeinu Yonah l'shitaso wouldn't matter, because Rabbeinu Yonah, the next Yibra Maskil, was of the opinion that the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, that the Chachamim's opinion is not accepted anyway. So what Rabbeinu Yonah l'shitaso, what he would think about how Chachamim instituted their gezeira, wouldn't matter so much, because according to Rabbeinu Yonah there is no gezeira. But l'maisa, if there was a gezeira, so Rabbeinu Yonah understood it, that Chachamim completely cancelled out Kriya Shema after Chatzos. Very striking concept. So what is this based on? Where could we even have a front door to such a concept? How could this even be a theoretical possibility? So this is really a sugya that appears in Yevamos on Daf Pei Tes Mebeis and Sadi Mebeis. It's difficult to put in a Marmar Komos because you have to borrow a line from here and a line from there. It's kind of spread out from Peites and Abeis to Tzadiyim and Abeis. But there, if you cut and paste enough words together, so you get the basic rule there that Yesh Koach Bidei Chachamim La'akor Davrim in HaTorah B'Shei Ve'al Taisa. That the Chazal have the ability to, so to speak, uproot a din in the Torah when it's done passively. Now, all of those words in that sentence are subject to definition, and that's what we'll try to talk about it a little bit. But either way, this is a very striking notion that Chazal, we normally assume that Chazal are adding on to the prohibitions of the Torah. Here, the Gemara tells us even more than that, that Chazal have the ability to impose their prohibitions in a situation where it will contradict the Torah itself. And the most common example of this, the most famous example of this, may not actually even be an example of this, but let's assume the mainstream opinion is that it is what's known as Gzeira D'Rabba, that the halacha is that one is obligated to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and one is obligated to take lulav on first day of Sukkot Min HaTorah. And the Torah does not distinguish whether it's Tuesday or whether it's Shabbos. Whenever the first day of Rosh Hashanah, whenever the first day of Sukkot falls out, there's an obligation to blow shofar and to take lulav, respectively. Nonetheless, there is the Gzeira in place. Now, we're afraid that if you're going to blow shofar on Shabbos, you're going to have a shiloh that's going to come up and you're going to want to take it to somebody to ask. And therefore, Chazal said that it's better not to blow shofar on Shabbos. Chazal also said we don't read Megillah on Shabbos either for this reason, but that's less of a concern to us because Megillah is an institution of Rabbanim to begin with, so we don't have to focus on that as much. But the bigger chiddush is by shofar and lulav the first day, which is a din mat Torah, and the Torah does not distinguish between Shabbos and any other day. Nonetheless, Chazal said, we do distinguish, we tell you not to take a lulav, not to blow shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah or Sukkot, if that day happens to be Shabbos, because of a concern for Chil Shabbos. Now, this seems to be the background for Rabbeinu Yonah's idea here also, that basically what Chazal did was Chazal made a gzeira that we're afraid you're going to forget about Kriya Shema, so therefore we made a gzeira not to read Kriya Shema after Chatzos. Even with this background, though, Rabbeinu Yonah is still more mechudish than we're familiar with, because the background, first we already acknowledged, we already discussed a little bit, that gzeiras are more commonly associated with prohibitions. The whole idea of a gzeira for a mitzvah saseh is already a chiddush. And here Rabbeinu Yonah is saying a bigger chiddush, that we're going to take away your opportunity within this same mitzvah in order to protect this mitzvah. It's one thing, our precedents to tell us, okay, so Chazal told us not to blow shofar on Shabbos because we're worried about Chilul Shabbos. So even though that impinges on the Kriya Mitzvah shofar, nonetheless we worry about keeping Shabbos. Or another example that's in the Gemara Menachos. The Gemara says in Menachos that in theory, so one should wear tzitzis, even if one should attach tzitzis to a garment, even when doing so will create shadness. One has a linen garment and is going to put on wool tzitzis, so even though that normally would be a violation of the Yisr shadness, but for the purposes of tzitzis, the obligation is there. But nonetheless, the Gemara tells us Chazal said not to do it. There were a number of four concerns that Chazal had, that the garment would rip, it wouldn't really be obligated in tzitzis, or that maybe the tzitzis wouldn't be any good, you wear it at night, whatever it is. The Gemara had a number of concerns that there would be an issue of shatnez without the fulfillment of the mitzvah of tzitzis. So the Gemara says, don't do it, even though in the Torah one should attach tzitzis to such a garment, there is an obligation of tzitzis. Nonetheless, the Gemara says, Chazal said not to do it. They were more concerned about the potential violations of shatnez that could come up, rather than the mitzvah of tzitzis. Okay, so again, so there you find that Chazal were worried about a certain prohibition. So they said, don't do this mitzvah because we're risking that prohibition. But the idea that Chazal are going to say, don't do this mitzvah then because we're worried that you're not going to do it right, is again something that we don't really have that much of a basis for. So that's Rabbeinu Yonah is still going to be striking, even once we're familiarized with this concept of Yesh Koach L'Akadav Min HaTorah B'Shei V'Al Taisa. So we're still a little bit shocked by what Rabbeinu Yonah has to say. Hi.
Is Rabbeinu Yonah saying you're not supposed to say Shema, or simply that you don't fulfill the mitzvah?
So, well, it's both. Let's say you're not supposed to say Shema. When it comes to Shema, as the Gemara has a language later, you have very little to lose by saying the words of Shema, because Shema is Psukim the Torah. So what's more striking is Rabbeinu Yonah says that Chazal have removed the mitzvah, so to speak, that if one were to do it, there's nothing going on. So this gets us into a discussion. Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman has a very beautiful discussion where he really puts this all into a very nice framework. So Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman has an essay about this that's printed in two places. One is printed in the Sefer on Yavamas, on the Sugya and the Kovetz Ha'aris Yavamas. And the numbering, you see, changes based on different editions or different versions of the Kovetz Ha'aris and Yavamas. But somewhere in the Kovetz Ha'aris and Yavamas, so Rabbi Elchanan has an essay about this. And it's also printed in the Kovetz Shiurim. In the Kovetz Shiurim, there's a section called Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, where there are five essays that Rabbi Elchanan wrote about topics related to Dinim D'Rabbanan. So this essay appears there as well. So both there in the Kovetz Shiurim and in the Kovetz Ha'aris, so Rabbi Elchanan has a very beautiful essay, a very beautiful lumdus, trying to analyze how this topic works. And basically, he suggests that there are three chakiros. There are three questions that one could ask about how this din is implemented. And then he shows you that really all three of these concepts tie in together, that all three chakiros are really tied into one. So the first chakir, as we'll discuss, I want to give a little more background to. He doesn't really go so far into the background of how this first chakir could be set up. So I'd like to try to go in a little bit more to some of the lumdus that could be behind it. Because the first question relates very much to this Rabbeinu Yonah. And the question that Rabbi Elchanan asks is that, okay, so the Gemara has this expression that Chazal have the ability to be Oker Davar Min HaTorah. That word Oker Davar Min HaTorah has a very strong connotation. Oker means to uproot. So is that what's happening? Is that actually what's going on? The Torah says to do X, and Chazal have canceled out the mitzvah. The mitzvah no longer exists. So the Torah says, Bo Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. And even if it's Shabbos, and Chazal say don't, have they canceled this mitzvah? There is no longer a mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Or do we say that no, there is a mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, but Chazal have the ability, have the authority to instruct you not to do it. They don't have the ability to rewrite the Torah. The Torah still says blow shofar 7 days a week. But Chazal have the authority, we have to listen to them when they tell us not to do it. That's question number one. And we'll deal with each question one at a time. But just before going further with this question, so what Rabbi Elchanan doesn't really spell out is that this can go to a more central question as to how the power of Chazal works. And this is a major dispute in the Achronim. And it could probably be traced to various opinions in Rishonim as well, but at least just to deal with what's more explicit, this is a major dispute in the Achronim. And the much more famous opinion is that which is attributed to the Nesivos HaMishpat, Siman Reish Lamed Daled. And on the other side, you have Rav Yosef Engel, at least, and perhaps many others. But the Nesivos' opinion is very famous. The Nesivos says like this, that, and again, I'm kind of summarizing it and going a little bit beyond his actual words, but the position that's attributed to Nesivos is as follows. That we know that if I do an Averu Min HaTorah on purpose, so they do it amazing. So they're punishments. And if I do an Averu B'Shogeg, so very often there are other types of things that are relevant, Karbanos, a Kaparo of some sort. The assumption being that even if I didn't do something wrong on purpose, still it has some type of a spiritual stain. Still there's some type of kapara that's necessary, even for a shogeg, because the act of doing an avera leaves some type of bad effect on it. The Nesiva suggests that this is not true when it comes to a drabbanon. that if you have an Aveira d'Rabbanan, so if you do it on purpose, that's wrong. Right? And we're going to see our Gemaras and Brachas have some very harsh words for people who violate Dinim d'Rabbanan. But if you do it by accident, suggests the Nesivus, so then there's really nothing to worry about. Why? Because the nature of an Issa d'Rabbanan is different than the nature of an Issa Min HaTorah. Again, not all of this is in the Nesivus himself, but this is the approach many Achronim have. That the nature of an Issa d'Rabbanan is different than the nature of an Issa d'Oraisa. That an Issa d'Oraisa, so the Torah, God made the world and God made the Torah. So the Torah reflects certain realities. So if the Torah says, don't eat chazer, so there's something inherent in the chazer that's bad. So even if you eat it by accident, you still have some type of spiritual issue to contend with. But when Chazal prohibits something, let's say Chazal say, whatever, you can't eat a chicken cheeseburger, a chicken and milk, we assume, and it's a drabban. So Chazal say, you can't eat a chicken cheeseburger. So Chazal did not make the world. So Chazal don't have the ability to tell you this chicken cheeseburger is inherently bad. If it wasn't inherently bad before they came along, it's not going to be inherently bad now. Rather, Chazal have authority over you. Right, this again, without getting too much into this part, this is a dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban as to how to understand the authority of Chazal. So the Torah says in Parsha Shoftim that when you have a question, you go to the authorities of that time to ask them what to do. And the Torah says you're not supposed to deviate, lo sasum hadav, you're not supposed to deviate from that which the Chazal tell you. So the Rambam understands, against the Ramban, the Rambam understands that this is the source for the ability of Chazal to make new mitzvahs as well, to create dinim d'rabbanan, that we are obligated to listen to what the Chazal say, even when they're making up new halachas. Okay, so Chazal have authority over us. Chazal can tell us what to do. So Chazal can tell us not to eat a chicken cheeseburger. But there isn't anything that's inherent in this chicken cheeseburger that's going to be bad. So therefore, if I ate it on purpose, so then I'm rebelling against Chazal and that's wrong. That's prohibited. I'm not allowed to do that. But if I didn't know, and I ate it by accident, so there's no rebellion because I didn't realize. I didn't know what I was doing. And there isn't anything that I have to contend with spiritually because there's nothing inherent in the chicken cheeseburger. All I would have done wrong is rebelled against Chazal, and I didn't rebel because I didn't know. So this is basically the Nesivus' point, that if I do an Issa d'Rabbanan by accident, so then there isn't really anything to contend with.
Did the Nesivus say that any Issa d'Oraisa done b'shogeg has some sort of impact?
So then we could discuss whether there are different natures, different Issurim d'Oraisa, and whether Kashrus is a special area. There's a lot one could question and one could further distinguish within these principles, but I'm trying to keep it as broad as possible.
The reason I'm asking is that if you're, what is the status of your shogeg violation of Rosh Hashanah?
What is the status of it as far as relating to the Issa d'Oraisa?
Yeah.
Right, so that's a topic that's going to take us a little more far afield. But in general, the whole idea that when you violate Nisra Rabbanan, on some level you're violating Nisra D'Oraisa is a more complicated one than we should really get into today. But there's definitely a way to talk about that. So in any case, so that's one position that is prominent in Achronim, that when there's a difference between Nisra D'Oraisa and Nisra Rabbanan, that Nisra Rabbanan is just an instruction by Chazal on the individual, what you might call a Nisra Gavra, that the rabbis tell you what to do, but they don't have the ability to affect reality beyond your responsibility to listen to them. While the Torah, the Yisurei Torah is something else. The Yisurei Torah has a certain inherent reality that we're obligated to respond to. So, that's, again, a very popular position in Achronim, but not everyone agreed. For example, Rav Yosef Engel in an essay in the Asman Daraisa, right, he doesn't think it's true. He brings raya from Midrash, from other indications that Kadosh Baruch Hu supports Chazal, Kadosh Baruch Hu endorses Chazal. So once Chazal come and they make a din, so then it does have an inherent reality. It does take on an inherent Isser, even though the Isser was only created by Chazal and it's not something that's in the Torah. So this is a dispute in Achronim. What ability Chazal have, basically what it boils down to is, do Chazal have some ability to affect the realities of the world through their gezeiras? Or is it basically they have authority on the individual? The human being has to listen to them. The Jew has to listen to Chazal. But that's basically how their authority operates. Not through their affecting any situation beyond that, but that we're obligated to listen to them. So one could really suggest that that's what behind what's behind these two possibilities that Rabbi Chanan is suggesting. That when Chazal make a gzeira against the Torah, so to speak, in a localized sense, when Chazal say, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, so what's going on? Did they cancel out the mitzvah of shofar on Shabbos? Do they have that ability? More similar to what Rav Yosef Engel might say, they really have the ability to kind of rewrite the Torah, they have such a far-ranging power? Well, no, do we say like the Nesiva says, that really the ability of Chazal is to the individual? They can tell you what to do. So therefore, they can tell you as a Jew not to blow shofar on Shabbos. But the fact that the Torah recognizes a mitzvah and obligates a mitzvah of blowing shofar on Shabbos is still going to exist. That's still going to be there. It just happens to be that the rabbis have the authority, and that's the still very mechudishtik fact, but the rabbis have the ability to tell us not to blow shofar on Shabbos, and we're supposed to listen, even though it says in the Torah otherwise.
You always argue that, first of all, you need to go by the angle. When it comes to a curious document in the Torah, they usually may have the ability to create certain status changes that, when it comes to a curious document in the Torah, they were not doing so. And also, according to the Sivas, even though they don't have the ability to create Surim, the Etzem, but they do, they may have some type of authority over the midst of the Torah mandates. They can't change reality. The Torah mandates a certain obligation. They can maybe pop it with an obligation.
Yeah, you're probably right that you could say differently. I'll just mention on the first point, Moshe Feinstein is parenthetically, Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about this Rabbeinu Yonah, in which he thinks that the whole debate about whether Rabbeinu Yonah is correct is not about whether the Chazal have the authority, because in Mishnah they do have the authority. The only question is, did they impose it in this sense to say that there's no Kriya Shema after Chatzos? So you're probably right that one could question within these details whether it has to line up exactly that way or not. I think broadly speaking, these issues are probably related. You know, do we view the power of Chazal as really functioning towards the individual? The individual is prohibited to do X, and therefore the Torah stays the same, just we're prohibited to perform this mitzvah. Or do we say Chazal have a broader ability to actually affect changes in the Torah, affect changes in the world, and therefore perhaps they could even rewrite the mitzvah, and the mitzvah no longer applies in that case? And you could certainly make distinctions within these two paths, but I think broadly they're probably related. Hi.
If you say that Chazal can't actually uproot it, they can just tell you not to do the mitzvah, so then
So that is one of the many questions. So let's say I blow, this is something that Rabbi Akiva Eiger discusses in his Drush V'Chiddush, his Marachas. So let's say I blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah. If I blow shofar on Shabbos Rosh Hashanah, do we say that I at least performed the mitzvah? Happened to be I was prohibited to do that, but once I did it, it's a mitzvah. Or do we say, and then you could also parenthetically get into questions of mitzvah babi aveira, mitzvah babi aveira drabanan, which is a side complication. But do we say that at least on some level there's potentially a mitzvah there for me to fulfill, just I'm held back from doing it? Or do we say, no, there really isn't any mitzvah left? And to give a more practical nafkamina, let's say it's Sukkos. And first day of Sukkos is Shabbos. And I take a lulav of the first day, something I heard him talk about. I take a lulav of the first day in violation of the Din D'Rabbanan. So the next day, when I take the lulav like I'm supposed to, so do you make a shechiyonu the second day? So that's something some achronim discussed, that it could be that if I did garnish the first day, Chazal canceled out the mitzvah, so then there's no reason for me not to make a shechiyonu the next day when I perform the mitzvah for the first time. But if we say that at least on some level I did perform a mitzvah, I was prohibited to do it, but l'maisa I did it, so then perhaps it would not be appropriate to make a shechiyonu the next day. So this is a question that achronim discussed. And a rai is brought from this Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah seems to be taking a stand on this topic. Rabbeinu Yonah says that Kriya Shema Chazal can kind of knock off the charts. So apparently we have this ability to rewrite a mitzvah. In general, this is a question, it's a popular one in Rishonim and Achronim. It's perhaps the Machlokas Tosfos in the Ran, in Sukkah and Daf Gimel. That without going into the details of the machloks Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about different gezeiras that are relevant to a sukkah, to sitting outside a sukkah with your head inside the table, with your head in the table inside the sukkah and you're outside of the sukkah, whatever it is. But the Gemara there has a phrase in response to what is essentially a gezeirah drabanan. So the Gemara there has a phrase, and you're going to do it like this against the din drabanan. Lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha. So you're not making the mitzvah of sukkah. So is that true? Is it possible for Chazal to say, because of this gezeira, if you ignore the gezeira, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah, even though that's a mitzvah min haTorah, min haTorah would have been okay? So that's probably a dispute between Tosfos over there and the Daf Gimel and the Ran. But it sounds like from Tosfos that yes, Chazal had the ability to say, this is what the mitzvah is now, and if you ignore us, there's no mitzvah. And the Ran understands it not so literally. We don't really mean to say, lo, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of sukkah. It means you didn't really do it properly. But the mitzvah of sukkah min haTorah, if you follow the rules min haTorah, so then at least
he didn't. He leaned over, and they're just saying, concerned that if he did this way, he probably ended up not.
Well, it's understood in Rishonim now, it's understood in Rishonim that if you ignored the Dindra Rabbanan, then even the mitzvah deraisa, you didn't do. That's Tosfos understands it more literally. Right. And we're not talking about that you did the problem that the Xavier was trying to avoid. Right? We're not talking about you blew shofar on Rosh Hashanah and you carried it also. Let's say you didn't violate any Isurim and Shabbos per se, but you violated the Xeru. So violating the Xeru, it sounds like from the Gemara, that itself not Mekayim the Mitzvah. So Tosfos says not Mekayim the Mitzvah at all, right? Chazal have the ability to redefine the Mitzvah. And the Ran understands it's not really literal. The Gemara just means to say that you didn't really do it properly. But what you did, Ben HaTorah, you did. And the Ran of Sashitaso has a similar comment in a more famous Mishnah. It's more famous because in the Haggadah, you know, the Mishnah says in the Haggadah, the Mishnah Psachim that's used in the Haggadah, that whoever doesn't say these three things, Pesach, Matzah, Maror, is not fulfilling his obligation. So the Ran says, again, it doesn't mean you're not fulfilling your obligation. Ben HaTorah, if you follow the rules, you're still fulfilling the Mitzvah Ben HaTorah. But you're not doing it properly, Midrabanan, and that's all the Mishnah means. So this is something that affects a number of other mitzvahs. For example, like Birkas HaMazon or Kiddush. Both things maybe we'll get out to more when we get further along in the Masechta. But Birkas HaMazon and Kiddush are two examples where you have what's essentially a mitzvah deraisa, but the version midrabanan is probably more than the version midraisa. For example, Birkas HaMazon, the four bracha structure, we assume at least the fourth bracha is a drabanan. And when it comes to Kiddush, it's a machlokas rishonim whether or not we need wine for Kiddush min haTorah. The Gemara says for sure you need wine for Kiddush. But it's machlokas whether or not that's a din derais or din derabanan. So if you assume it's a din derabanan, that we need wine for Kiddush, so here also you could ask the question, if Chazal come and tell you that yes, min haTorah, if you just said Kiddush without wine, you're yotzei, but we're telling you you have to use wine, or yes, min haTorah, if you bench three brachas, you're yotzei, but we're telling you you have to make four. So if I fail to fulfill the mitzvah on a level midrabanan, do I even fulfill anything deraisa? That's a question. That's something that the Sfarim discuss, which all seems to relate back to this point that Rabbi Yonah is addressing here, and that Rabbi Chaim is asking about this whole concept. Do Chazal have the ability to kind of redefine a mitzvah? Or do they tell you what to do, but the Torah still stands the way it is? So that's basically question number one. Of the Rebbe Chanan's three chakiras, that's his first chakira. Do we say that the mitzvah is completely uprooted? There is no longer an obligation to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah if that day is Shabbos? Or do we say, no, the mitzvah is there, but Chazal tell you not to do it? Hi.
So you mean, whether it's Yosef Engel and Yosefus, whether it's the Ran and Tosfos within that whole chakira?
Mm-hmm.
That's all working within the Gemara and the Gemara says that's only the Shevi Al
Taisa. Oh, so what about Shevi Al Taisa? So that's the second question. Oh, so we'll see how it lines up. Because what about the second question? So Chana, as I mentioned, has three questions. So the second question is exactly that. That the Gemara puts this limitation on this ability of Chazal. The ability of Chazal to be Oker Dav Min HaTorah apparently is the Shev Al Taisa, which was not the only opinion of the Gemara. The Gemara also discusses being Oker Dav Bekum Vaasei. But the way it... Sorry? The Kumbase? Yeah, it's an opinion in the Gemara, but the way the sugya ends off is Sheva Al Taisa. So this idea of Sheva Al Taisa, so that's what Rabbi Chanan's next two questions are about. Both of his, the next two of his three questions are about this clause, Sheva Al Taisa. First of all, the definition of Sheva Al Taisa is a question. What exactly does that expression mean? And it's an important topic to clarify, because it comes up at least in three areas in the Torah. Two areas in Shas and one area that comes up later. There are at least three areas in which defining Shevi Al Taisa properly has been a discussion. One is in this area. The other area is also Gemara and Brachas. Maybe we'll get to it in Daf Yutes. Kavod HaBrias. The Gemara says that Kavod HaBrias has the ability to overcome Dinim Daraisa B'Shevi Al Taisa. And also, the third one is rooted in later sources that the Gemara says in Ksubis that one's only obligated to spend, one should not spend more than one-fifth of his money on staka. So the Rama says, based on Rishonim, this is true by mitzvahs also, that one should not spend more than a fifth of his money on mitzvahs. But he says there's a distinction against other sources, but the way the Rama understands the distinction, that for mitzvahs asay, you should only spend a fifth of your money, but for mitzvahs los asay, you should spend all of your money. So in these three areas, you find Achronim talking in all of these three areas, how do we define Shevi al Taisa versus Kumbase? Because I could think of two ways to do it. On the one hand, we could be addressing behavior. We could be saying that if you're going to do something active, that's called Kumbase. But if you're going to just sit at home and not do something, that's called Shevi al Taisa. And when the Chazal have the ability to be Oker Dover B'Shev Al-Taisa, it means Chazal can tell you to sit at home and ignore a responsibility, but they can't tell you to go out and do something wrong. That would be how this would play out. Or Kavod Abrius can make you sit home and ignore a responsibility, but Kavod Abrius can't make you do something wrong. Or you're obligated to spend all of your money to avoid actively doing something wrong, but if you're just staying home, you only have to spend a fifth. Or I could say it's not about behavior, but we're talking about classification. We're talking about is something viewed as a los assay or as an assay. That perhaps prohibitions are, for whatever reason, considered to be more severe than mitzvos are, than active mitzvos are, and therefore we're allowed to violate an assay, but violating a los assay, that's too much. And these two possibilities are not always the same thing. Passive and active versus prohibition and mitzvah are not always the same thing. Like, for example, there's an iser lo solin, say, by kfura. So you're prohibited to not bury somebody for too long of a time. That's phrased as a lo sasa. So how would we classify this? On the one hand, by not doing it, you're behaving passively. You're just staying at home and not doing something. But on the other hand, it's phrased as an iser, as a lo sasa. So these two categories don't always line up. There's differences between them. So when we say Chazal have the ability to be Oker, Davar, and HaTorah, so only B'Shev Al Taisa, does that mean they're only allowed to tell you not to do something, but they can't tell you to do something wrong? Or does it mean they can only cancel out an Asay, but they can't cancel out a Los Asay? And to illustrate this point, to see, if you look at the Rashbah, Rashbah has a number of concepts, Lushitaso. Probably three Rashbahs Lushitaso, at least on this point. For example, there is a case that's mentioned in the beginning of Maseches Ksubis, Daf Gimel Amud Beis, and Naftali Amud Aleph. It's a very sad case. The Gemara talks about a situation where a chassan and a kala are about to get married, and one of the parents passes away right then, right before the chuppah. Everything's ready, and right before the chuppah, so there is a situation of a veil is presenting itself. The body hasn't been buried yet, but there's a situation of a veil is presenting itself at the same time as the wedding. So the Gemara has a whole scenario there where the wedding takes place first, then there's the funeral, then there is first Sheva Brachas, then a veilus. So the Rishonim discuss how could it be that Sheva Brachas is going to take precedence over Avelus. Now, if we assume, as we probably do, Halacha L'maisa, both Avelus and Sheva Brachas are institutions midrabanan, so this is less of a problem. But there are positions in Rishonim, minority positions, that Avelus is a din min HaTorah. According to some opinions, all of Avelus, according to the Rambam and the Rif, the first day of Avelus is min HaTorah. So if some of Avelus is min HaTorah, so how could we allow Sheva Brachas to take precedence over Shiva, over Avelus? So the Ran and the Rashbah both give the same answer, but they differ from each other in a very important way. The Ran and the Rashbah both say the reason Sheva Brachas can come before Avelus, even if Avelus is Minatoru, is because Yesh Koach Bidei Chachamim Laker Davar Minatoru B'Shevi Al Taisa. The rabbis have the ability to push off, to uproot a Din Minatoru if they're doing it passively. Should parenthetically mention, by the way, that the Rabbeinu Yonah on our Gemara, Rabbeinu Yonah identifies this power as being one for Kiyum Mitzvahs, that if it's going to support a mitzvah, so Chazal had this ability. You have to figure out in this Gemara and Ksubas what the mitzvah is. It could be the mitzvah is the mitzvah of getting married, because maybe if the impression seems to be that if a wedding gets canceled, then they're not going to be able to restart things. For financial reasons, it's not going to be possible. So one could take that view of the Gemara. It sounds like from the Gemara, like we're just worried about a massive chesed mamon. But whatever it is. So the Ran and the Rashba both say that that's what's going on here, that the rabbis have the ability to uproot a mitzvah d'oraisa, so therefore this works. But there is a crucial difference between how the Ran and the Rashba describe it. Because the Ran says, for this first day, assuming the first day is d'oraisa, for this first day, so the chassan and whoever it is not obligated to do acts of avelus, because Chazal are able to excuse him from this. But he can't party either that first day. Because to be partying, that would be active. That wouldn't be passive. And Chazal only have the ability to do this passively, they can't do it actively. Shevi al taisa, they can tell you not to sit shiva, but they can't allow you to party during this time, because that would be an active violation of the din in the Torah. The Rashba, however, understands it very differently. The Rashba also says, Yesh koch b'dei chachamim lakar dav min haTorah. But he's not worried about the partying on the first day, because in the Rashba's understanding, so Avelus is viewed as one big mitzvah saseh, that there is a mitzvah to perform Avelus, and Chazal excused you from this mitzvah. And therefore, once they excuse you from this mitzvah, so it doesn't matter whether your behavior is active or passive within being excused from this mitzvah. So it seems like the Ran and the Rashba are arguing on this point. That according to the Ran, the qualification of Sheva al Taisa is referring to passive behavior. So therefore, you have the right to skip out on Shiva, but you don't have the right to do anything active against Avelus. While according to Rashba, it's a matter of categorization, that if we categorize the Avelus as an assay, so therefore the whole thing can be excused, and the fact that active behavior may be involved doesn't matter. Hi.
Why is it based on... couldn't you say it's based on the first question?
First question of whether it's cancelled out or not?
Yeah, because it's cancelled out, then there's no problem partying.
Yeah, but either way, if Chazal have the ability to tell you to ignore it, then they could also tell you there's no problem. It's more a question of how the Sheva al Taisa plays out. And you see this Rashba is really the Shitasto in a couple of other places also. Hi? Because then Chazal, when we say that Chazal can cancel out a mitzvah b'Sheva al Taisa, he reads that as meaning Chazal can excuse you from a mitzvah saseh. So if you view Avelus as a commandment to do Avelus, so Chazal can say this commandment no longer is relevant to you. And therefore the fact that you may be behaving actively doesn't matter. And the Raya, that the Rashba thinks this way, we see a couple of other examples. For example, the Rashba writes in the middle of Rosh Hashanah that in discussing the prohibition of Baal Tosef, so the Rashba says that if Chazal were to tell you to do a mitzvah twice, Torah tells you to do it once and Chazal tell you to do it twice, that would not be a violation of Baal Tosef. Because how do you know? Because we know that there's a concept called Yesh Koch Decham Lakar Davar Min HaTorah. Chazal can tell you not to do a mitzvah. So it must be that's not Baal Tigra. Right? If that power exists for Chazal, it must be that's not a violation of Baal Tigra. So too, if they tell you to do a mitzvah twice, it's not Baal Tosef. Now you could ask on this Rashba, what do you mean? Maybe once they're being ochre mitzvahs, maybe they were ochre Baal Tigra also. How do you know that the same way they're ochre whatever mitzvah they're talking about, they weren't also ochre Baal Tigra? So it must be that according to the Rashba, they can't be ochre Baal Tigra. Because Baal Tigra is a low sase. Even though it would be passive, you'd just be sitting at home and not doing the mitzvah. Nonetheless, it must be that if Baal Tigra was relevant, that wouldn't be possible, because Baal Tigra is a prohibition. So the fact that Chazal can do it must indicate that Baal Tigra is not relevant. So there also you see that the Rashba says we're talking about an action, doesn't matter. The question is whether it's categorized as passive or active. And to give one last example, so if you saw this Gemara in Gittin, and Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, and Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, it talks about Prusbul. Prusbul is a concept which has a lot of confusion about how Prusbul operates. Now we know that the Torah tells us that Shemitah cancels out loans, And we know that prosbul exists, which allows us to kind of get around that, that if you make a shtar prosbul, so the loan's not going to get cancelled. And we know that somewhere in there, Chazal uprooting Divrei Torah plays a role. So many people understand that what happened was Chazal stepped in and undid the mitzvah in the Torah to cancel our loans. But if you look at the Gemara, that's not how it plays out at all. But really, the way it plays out is that the reason prosbul works is because we assume that Shemitah was manazah as drabanan. That Ben HaTorah, we don't have an active Shemitah. So it's only Midrabanan that Shemitah canceled that loan. So Midrabanan, Chazal dealt with their own Dindrabanan by instituting prosbul. Could be. But that's the way the sugya about Sheva Altaisa and Akira is related to this point. So the Gemara asks, based on that, so the Gemara says, if you're going to tell me, though, that Shemitah is only Drabanan, so how could that reality exist? How could it be that the rabbis could tell you because min haTorah I'm obligated to pay back a loan, and the rabbis are going to tell me I don't have to? How's that going to happen? How do they have that ability? So the Gemara gives two answers. One answer is Hefker Bez and Hefker. The rabbis have that ability, and the other answer is Shevi Al Taisa, whatever that means. So if you look at Rashi, so what you see here is that the Gemara is asking a question that how could the rabbis cancel out a loan midrabanan? You're going to violate Lo Sigzol. You're going to not pay back your loan, and you're going to violate Lo Sigzol. So, Shev Al Taisa, they're able to do it. So here you have a prohibition. You'll violate it passively by just staying at home and not paying back the loan. But it's a prohibition of Lo Sigzol, apparently. And yet, we're applying this rule of Shev Al Taisa. So how's the Rashba going to deal with that? I recall years ago I was learning the sugya of the Chavrusa, and we tried to figure out how would the Rashba deal with this, and we had a very luyish idea. So look in the Rashba. So if you look in the Rashba on that daf in Gittin, so you'll see Hitaka understands it differently. He has a different explanation. This is not the normal Shev Al Taisa that we're talking about, and he says not like Rashi says. So Mustelmig, and the Rashba is forced to say that because the Rashba would not allow Akira Stavrim HaTorah in this case, because Lo Sigzol is a lav, and if that's relevant, so then Akira Stavrim HaTorah can't work by a Lo Sigzol. So the question then is, again, question number two, Rabbi Chanan wants to know, when we talk about being Oker Stavrim HaTorah B'Sheva Al Taisa, are we talking about Sheva Al Taisa meaning passive behavior, or are we talking about uprooting an Aseh, but they can't uproot a Lo Sigzol? That's question two. Question three, Rabbi Chanan wants to know about Sheva Al Taisa as well. And that's basically whatever this limitation of Sheva Al Taisa is, however we interpret it, the question is why? Why does such a limitation exist? Why don't we say that Chazal have the ability to uproot anything? Once we're saying this shocking ability exists, so why do we limit it with Sheva Al Taisa? What's the reason for this limitation? So Rabbi Chanan suggests two possible angles. On the one hand, we could say that it's just a question of severity. That apparently a kumba aseh is more severe than a sheva al taisa. So Chazal have power, they don't have that much power. They have the power to uproot a kumba aseh, it's less severe. But to uproot a kumba aseh, that would take more power than they have. So it could be a quantitative distinction. That basically, the Talmud is just telling us that Chazal have a certain amount of power against the Torah, but not that much. To go so far as to uproot a kumbase, they don't have that much power. They only have the power of uprooting Sheva Al Taisa. That's one possible angle. The second angle Bohanan suggests is maybe more of a functional point. That perhaps what's going on here is you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. On the one hand, if I blow shofar on Shabbos, I'm going to get Chazal upset. Chazal told me not to do it. But if I don't blow shofar on Shabbos, I'm going to get God upset. Because God told me to do that. So I'm stuck. On the one hand, I have Chazal telling me not to do this, and I have a Torah telling me to do it. So there isn't really any way to reconcile them both. They're saying mutually exclusive things. But as a general rule of thumb, if you're stuck between two forces, Sheva Al Taisa Adif. It's preferable if you just sit it out, at least you're not flying in anyone's face. You're still going to be opposing something, but at least it's passive. So this is Rabbi Yochanan's second suggestion, that maybe the reason we say Sheva Altais is the way to go is because you're stuck between two mutually exclusive options. So at the very least, if you act passively, that's the safer of the two ways to deal with things. At least you're not actively violating anything. Hi?
Why don't we just, if it's between Rabbanan and Hashem, why don't we just stick to Rabbanan?
Because we know that Rabbanan have this authority. So apparently, once we know they have this authority, that puts us in a bind. Because now we have these two contradictory pieces of advice, so who do we follow? So apparently, the best way to do it would be to just stay out of things. Hi?
Once we have once we know that Rabbanan has authority, why are they contradictory?
Why so that, here's how Rabbi Yochanan explains the three questions tie in. Because basically, you see, if you follow it through, these three questions are all tied into each other. That's how Rabbi Yochanan explains at the end. They're all interconnected. Because if we believe that Chazal uprooted the mitzvah completely, so then there's no reason to say, like Alan's saying, there's no reason to say we're in between a rock and a hard place. There's no obligation to blow shofar on Shabbos. So therefore, the Hesber, why is it Sheva Al Taisa? It must be that Sheva Al Taisa is only because of a quantitative limit on the authority, and not because of this whole stay out of it and don't do anything active Hesber. So if it's a limitation on authority, that could also tell us what side to take in the question of how we define Sheva Al Taisa. Because if Sheva Al Taisa is about quantitative factors, so then it should be defined categorically as los ases versus ases. Los ases apparently are more severe than ases. So Chazal have the ability to uproot ases, which are less severe. But los ases, they don't have that much authority. So therefore, these three positions all line up together. Chazal totally uproot the mitzvah. They can only uproot ases and not los ases. And therefore, that's what Sheva Taisa means, ases as opposed to los ases. While if we take the second track, we say the mitzvah is still there, and Chazal told us not to do it. So if Chazal told us not to do it, so then that's why we Sheva Taisa, because we're stuck between listening to Chazal and listening to the Torah. So therefore, Sheva Al Taisa, stay out of it. And therefore, we're defining Sheva Al Taisa as behavior. Because it's a question of what you do versus what you don't do. And therefore, it's not relevant whether something is classified as los assay or assay. What's relevant is how are we going to behave? Are we going to do something active against whatever it is? Or are we just going to sit home and not do it? And that's basically how it lines up. So again, to summarize, Rabbi Yochanan asks these three chakiras, and they each line up with each other on sides, that what's going on? Does the Torah tell us, does the Chazal tell us not to follow the Torah, or do Chazal redefine the mitzvah of the Torah? Does Sheva Al Taisa mean behavior, or does it mean classification? And does Sheva Al Taisa respond to the fact that we're stuck between two opposing forces? Or is it a quantitative factor? And again, they line up that if Chazal uproot a mitzvah from the Torah, perhaps they can only uproot something that's an assay and not a los assay, and therefore it's defined categorically and quantifiably. While if we say the mitzvah is still there, again, like the nesivus, that the rabbis can only address an individual and tell you what to do. So it means the mitzvah in the Torah is still there, just we're told not to do it. So then maybe Sheva Al Taisa is because we want to stay out of the fight. And then again, it's a function of our behavior more than it is a function of anything we do. Anyhow, so we're running out of time. Just to bring this back again to our Mishnah, and I guess Shemekona we'll have to discuss tomorrow. So in our Mishnah, so we see that Rabbeinu Yonah has this idea that after Chatzos, the mitzvah is gone. And the Rambam explicitly disagrees. The Rambam says that there's a din l'chatfila to read Kriyat Shema before Chatzos, paskening like Chachamim. But after Chatzos, you can also do it. The L'chachil is supposed to be before Chatzos. But the Rambam writes explicitly, now like Rabbeinu Yonah, that after Chatzos, you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. The interesting thing is, he does not say like this when it comes to Hector Chalavim Ve'Varim. When it comes to Hector Chalavim Ve'Varim, so we saw, that was also Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam, whether such a gzeira exists. But the Rambam acknowledges the gzeira. The Rambam says there's a gzeira by Hector Chalavim Ve'Varim until Chatzos. But when it comes to that Kazarus, the Rambam says, after Chatzos, it's over. After Chatzos, you don't do it. And when it comes to Kriya Shema, he interprets it as a L'chachila, that you should do it before Chatzos. But after Chatzos, you could also do it. So why is there a difference? Why is it that when it comes to Kriya Shema, he says, you can still do it after Chatzos with the Eved, and by Hector Chol B'Varim, it seems not that way. So in the Sefer Avi Ezri, there is an explanation. The Avi Ezri is normally written by Rav Shach. Rav Shach's Sefer on the Rambam. It happens to be this piece is not from Rav Shach, it's from Rav Shach's son-in-law, Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman, who's more familiar from the Sfarim Shari Yorah Ala Torah. So there's a number of comments in the Avi Ezri that are from him, so this is one of them. So Rav Meir Tzvi Bergman explains as follows, that he brings rayas from the Gemara in Brachas and Dafir Aleph and from the Gemara in Sukkah, from the way the Rambam responds to this, that the Rambam doesn't believe that Chazal had the ability to uproot mitzvahs in the Torah. That Chazal can just tell you a prohibition which affects how you're going to behave. So, therefore, there's a difference between Hekter Chalom Veivarim and Kriyashma. Because when we're dealing with Hekter Chalom Veivarim, what are we worried about? We're worried about an Issa. We're worried about Noser. If you're going to leave the Karbanos on the Mizbeach still existing past Alos HaShachar, so you're going to violate Noser. There's going to be an Issa. When it comes to Hekter Chalom Veivarim, we have a prohibition. When it comes to Kriyashma, there's no prohibition. All we have is the mitzvah of Kriyashma by itself. So Mamela, when it comes to Kriyashma, since the Rambam doesn't acknowledge an ability of Chazal to redefine mitzvahs, so therefore the mitzvah of Kriyashma has to be that if it exists in our Torah after Chatzos, so Midraban it also exists after Chatzos. So if Chazal told you to read it before Chatzos, that's a little Chachila, but in our Torah the mitzvah still exists after Chatzos. But when it comes to Hekter, Chalav, and Bevarim, there's a prohibition. So the Torah, so the Chazal can say, because of the prohibition of Nosar, so we prohibit you from having the Hekter Chalom Veivarim around after Chatzos. So therefore, because they're functioning in response to that prohibition, that could be a prohibition not to get involved after Chatzos. When it comes to Kriyashma, there isn't any prohibition. There's only this mitzvah satsay. So therefore, Mamele, it's only got to be al-Chachila, but the mitzvah itself is not redefined. That's how the Avi Ezri, by this part by Reb Bergman, explains why the Rambam would distinguish between these two mitzvahs, and that relates to this whole question Bachani was discussing about what exactly is going on when Chazal uproot mitzvahs. Okay, so we're basically out of time. Just to quickly recap what we spoke about, so we discussed this idea that there are a number of questions about the Gzeira in the Mishnah of Kriyat Shema Til Chatzos. Rabbeinu Yonah has this idea that after Chatzos doesn't exist anymore, seemingly built on the Gemara Nevamah, that Chazal have the ability to be Oker Dov Minatorah B'Shei Be'Ataisa. And we discussed the various questions Bachanan has about that concept. What's going on? Is the mitzvah really gone, or is it there and Chazal told you to ignore it? And we suggested that could be related to the Machlokas, the Nesivis, and Reb Engel, as to how mitzvahs Rabbanan operate in general. Do Chazal tell you what to do, or do Chazal have a broader power? And that affects various issues within how these mitzvahs play out, and Kriyashma and Berkas HaMazon and Kiddush, things where Chazal redefined the mitzvah, how is that affect things. We discussed Machlokas, the Ran and Tosfos and Sukkah and Daf Gimel about Lo Kiyamta mitzvah Sukkah Miyamecha and the Ran and Psachim. And then we discussed the second question of Reb Elchanan about what's the definition of Sheva Atayis and how that affects also Kavod HaBrius and spending more than a fifth of your money and all of that. And then discuss the third question of Reb Elchanan about why it is that Sheva Atayis is the factor. Is it because you're rocking a hard place, or is it a quantitative distinction? We show how these three chakiras relate to each other, as Reb Elchanan explains. Then back to our Mishnah, the question of why the Rambam distinguishes between Kriyashma and Hekter Chalom Veivarim, that apparently Kriyashma can be done after Chatzos and Hekter Chalom Veivarim not, and apparently because the Rambam understands that Chazal don't redefine mitzvahs, but when there's a prohibition in place, so then they can say absolutely respond to this prohibition. So the prohibition of Nosar plays a role in Hekter Chalom Veivarim, but by Kriyashma we're only dealing with the internal mitzvahs haseh, and therefore the rules are going to be different. Okay, so Be'ez Hashem tomorrow at 12 o'clock, right? So Shir Tzur is at 12 o'clock tomorrow, so we'll discuss a little bit about Shemei Kohen as it comes out from this mission. Shkayach. Are you davening Echa? Okay. Right, sure. Send a little from there.
What is the wrong with the Gemara that says when we that halacha krav or when we will?
So there's the Beis Yosef tries to explain it, but it's difficult. So the Beis Alevi has a whole comment on this. Beis Yosef tries to explain what he means. that basically that Rabbi Yoshua, the Elazar, Rabbi Elazar, would have made even more of a gzeira, that the Chazal were making one gzeira, and that really Rabbi Elazar was a gzeira even beyond what Chazal was doing. And that when the Gemara says Rabbi Gamliel is right, the Gemara only meant to say that Rabbi Elazar's gzeira is not accepted. It doesn't mean to say that there wouldn't still be another gzeira from Chazal. It's a filpul.
I thought it just meant that, just looking, that it would be the only kushitas of Elazar.
Take a look at the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef tries to explain. Basically, the Beis Yosef tries to explain that the Rambam would have to understand the Gemara. On the surface, you're right. The Gemara seems to be explicitly saying Rabbi Gamliel is right. So the way the Beis Yosef seems to suggest is that the Gemara only meant to say that in relation to Rabbi Elazar. That the Gemara wasn't addressing Chachamim. So against Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Gamliel is right. And then the Beis Levi tries to explain what that means. Still, the words don't seem to fit. So the Beis Levi says maybe what Beis Yosef means. Because again, he doesn't think this is chat. He just thinks that otherwise there's no explanation in the Beis Yosef. So in order for Beis Yosef to make some potential sense, so it's got to be that there was a more, right, there's more of a gzeira that Rabbi Elazar was suggesting.
Beis Levi on Beis Yosef.
Right, Beis Levi is in the Shuvas, but he's commenting on the Beis Yosef to try to explain how he's taken around on the Beis. But Pashup Shad is to the Marvel, he's not saying that. Basically, he's not trying to pass this off as most likely explanation tomorrow. Beis Levi is just saying the words Beis Levi says is that the Beis Yosef is mechusar haban. Otherwise, we can't understand what Beis Yosef says. So I'd like to suggest this: the Beis Yosef shouldn't see it explicitly. Must be saying they were. Present what
obviously, the
saying.
Idea of it's an active passive issue, that you're better off just being passive, don't be active. So that's how those two should line up. And the other way is to say that, no, really, they were okay to be culpable.
That,
but only okay essay.
That's what the business says, but again, that's still also a little mysterious.
Why? Because essay is more common.
It's three opinions, and the market picks one. Passion is that one. So why does it say that? We only mean, again, we only mean
two opinions.
Which is A, B, and C. And the Gemara says C words. So Passion
and
C. But
the Gemara itself says,
doesn't mean that
two is coming
going. So either you say that they weren't open entirely. And therefore, since there is a zero, you're better off just being passive. So
when you take the two extremes, it's not that.
It holds that.